the first dog I ever loved was Sadie. And Sadie was a chocolate brown standard poodle. And we had her through living in Coventry and then living in Leeds until I was about 14 years old when she died. And sadly, my dad had to take her to the vet for her final day, and he couldn't do it. And he went three times before he actually got her out of the car, because she was like an extra child in the family. She was a much loved family pet and will always be remembered very fondly.
Well, today's guest has gone all in when it comes to our furry friends, because Gabby Logan, for the purposes of this podcast, has got two dogs, but there are also ponies and horses in the family as well. Any other animals?
We've had plenty. We've had rabbits, we've had guinea pigs, we've had hamsters. In fact, there is a hamster still at large in this house, sadly escaped from its home, and we've never found 3 years later. So you never know, today could be the day. Spot, your dog might find the hamster. We've had tortoises. So yeah, we've gone through all the small animals, and I've said now no more small animals, because my kids are 15 and I think it's very much a young kind of child thing, isn't it? All the small animals. And we've got enough going on with the big dogs and the big ponies.
And the big dogs and the big ponies, how much is that your husband Kenny's influence as a farmer when he was younger?
Well, the dogs is both of us. You know, our first dog we got together in Scotland when he was playing at Glasgow before we had children. And our ponies are, my daughter is really into riding, but he's really into riding as well. He's really into horses, and he's really into Kenny. If it was up to Kenny, there'd be five Highland cows out there in the garden as well. So he loves, even though he kind of does this fake moan about the ponies, oh, they're so expensive and the vet's bills are expensive, he absolutely loves going to the shows, and he loves taking her to, you know, to the yard, and he even loves kind of, you know, the general kind of looking after them at home. So yeah, I think it's a team thing. But the dogs, there's no way that anybody in this family would ever kind of vote to not have a dog. Everybody's really into the dogs.
You've got Milo the boxer and Maggie the labradoodle. How do they actually get on with the horses?
Interestingly, we've got a Shetland here who's a companion pony for the foal, because we've got a foal who's a yearling. And the Shetland's hilarious because he winds Milo up. So he has this game where Milo walks into the paddock, he chases him as if he's going to do something to him, and Milo absolutely bricks it and runs in the opposite direction. Whereas Maggie just kind of saunters around him. So the Shetland's got the kind of measure of Milo, but Milo and Maggie think the horses are great. And they've been taken to shows a lot over the years, so they're not scared of horses. But they're quite interesting together, because I think dogs don't ever really know their own size, do they? You know, and then when you put a big foal next to them, suddenly they do look a bit confused, because the foal's obviously a baby as well. But yeah, it's very sweet when you see them all together interacting, actually.
Do you ride?
No, although I keep saying to Kenny that I'm going to secretly have lessons and surprise Lois one day. And kind of, and she did when we were in lockdown. We had her last pony that we just sold came home, and so that she could hack every day. And she did give me a lesson, actually, on what is kind of Ruben's rugby pitch. There's some rugby posts over there, and we went round, and she kind of gave me a few lessons, and I felt quite confident, actually, at the end of it, because she was quite good. But she was probably being very kind to me and just doing very basic
things. But didn't you once tell a TV executive that you could ride to try and get a job?
Well, Sonia, I thought, how hard can it be? And I was in the offices of Tyne Tees, and there was a show that was like a nightly version of, it was like The One Show, but on about 1/100th of the budget. And I wasn't the host. I was working in local radio. I was only 22, 23, just graduated. And I had a job of taking people out to dinner and interviewing them for the show. It was a strand called Gabbing with Gabby, which was rather embarrassing. And I then presented with a medal after the meal to prove that they'd gabbed with me, including Anton Deck, who Ant still swears he had his medal. And because the connection was, you had to be from the northeast, or you had to live in the northeast.
Got you, okay.
Eventually, it became people who drove through the northeast, because we ran out of guests. And I was in the office one day prepping an interview, and they said, "We need somebody who can ride." And so I just shot my hand up without even knowing what the next part of the sentence was going to be. And the next part of the sentence was to joust with the world jousting champion. So it wasn't just ride. You're actually going to have to do something incredible. It's like, so then I slowly lowered my hand down when it was too late. And they said, oh, brilliant. It's Friday. Now, this was Tuesday. And I rang up some stables near where I lived and said, help me. And, you know, so I did 3 days of intense lessons. And when I got there, this thing was 18 hands.
Oh,
it was huge. bulge. And I got on it eventually and just wouldn't move. It knew. Horses are clever, aren't they? When you put an idiot on their back, they go, you're going to die if I do what I normally do. So I'm going to leave you there. So in the end, the producer said, oh, just walk, for God's sake. I think it's fair to say I spoilt his idea of what the piece was going to look like. But
I love that story. So as I said, you've got Milo the boxer and Maggie the Labradoodle. So which one of the two joined the Logan clan first?
Okay, so Milo arrived and we moved here about 7 years ago. And just if you look out that window there, just beyond that bush is a small olive tree where our previous dog, Sydney, was buried. And sadly, Sydney didn't make it here. She died just before we arrived. And so we said, you know what, this place was still like a building site. We'll just have a bit of time without a dog, maybe a year or two, just to kind of get used to, you know, living here. And within about a month, Lois and I had gone for a coffee in a local cafe. And she probably wasn't drinking coffee because she was seven, but she's quite precocious. And and the lady next to us had this adorable ball of black fluff that just couldn't stop kind of like saying hello to us. And I said, oh my God, your dog's so gorgeous. What is it? And it was a cockapoo, I think. And she said, oh, I got her from Preloved. And I didn't know what this was and sounded like, you know, a website where dogs were kind of given away because they weren't loved anymore. But it's actually a bit slightly more sophisticated than that. And as soon as we got home, Lois was on Preloved going through this website.
Of course she was.
Yeah. And I was saying, no, no, no. And then she found this boxer called Milo. And he lived about half a mile from our previous house, which was in Richmond upon Thames. Which, first of all, you know, you kind of go, oh, it's fate. We must have walked past him on the river. We must have known him. They probably sniffed each other, you know. And the family were going to live in Spain, and they didn't think it would be fair for Milo because he didn't like the heat and, you know, various other reasons they didn't want to take him. And so we went, within about a week, we went to see him. And a week later, he was living here. So that lasted a long time, didn't it? That break from a dog. So we've always been big boxer fans. And he's so handsome. And he was just so lovely. And he's, you know, he was really easy. And he was kind of just up for it. You know, he kind of was ready to have a bit of country living. So he came. And then Maggie, her mum lives on the road. So,
So
we loved her mum, and the owner said to us, Kate, she's really lovely. She said, well, she's going to have one more litter. She's had one and she's going to have another one. I'll let you know. And very soon afterwards, she had a litter. And so we met her when she was 3 days old. We were the first people to go see the litter.
Oh,
and
that's nice.
So she sees her mum on a walk and things in the mornings, and which is really quite sweet. You know,
it is.
And it's nice to know that her other siblings are all around the area. They went for a big meet at Great Windsor Park where both her litters came for a kind of huge day out. So there were about
family
14
gathering
of them. Yeah. And Lois went, and I couldn't go, I was working. And Lois said, Mum, Maggie's the only one that didn't doodle because she looks more like a Labrador.
She looks very like a Labrador. I didn't realise she had doodle in her at all.
No. So, but the others do. They've all got these massive shaggy coats, which
isn't
is what
funny?
I wanted. I wanted a big shaggy dog. Kenny, I don't think, secretly did. So he's quite happy that that she didn't doodle.
Well, when I arrived, met Milo, and I just thought if Milo was a rugby player, he would definitely play in the front row.
Yeah.
He's quite a solid dog. And Spot and Milo, as I said to you when I got out of the car, is it okay if Spot comes in? And you very kind, yeah, no problem. I'm thinking, well, Spot's pretty good with other dogs.
It didn't really quite go to plan, did it?
There
was a little, I think Spot got a little bit of, you called it Napoleon complex.
Yeah, Napoleon syndrome.
Because Milo's not really bothered about, you know, kind of generally about other dogs. We have a lot of friends with small dogs come and stay for the night and he doesn't really care. But I think Spot's a lot younger as well. How old's Spot?
It's four.
Yeah, and I think, you know, the enthusiasm. Sometimes older people get annoyed by young people's enthusiasm,
yes,
don't they?
Well, we suddenly had a sort of dog war, didn't we?
Yeah.
And I was nothing like introducing yourself to friends when you arrive. Hi, how are you? Oh, my God. And yeah.
Oh, they've been all right since,
I think. They've been all right. But there were teeth barred and a little bit of blood drawn. And
yeah,
we just
said that was on my dog?
Yeah, it was your dog. Sorry, Milo. But
don't be painting out Milo as the blood drawer. But Milo's got no teeth. This is what I always laugh at when delivery men come, because Milo's got his bark is really deep, you know, and these delivery men can sometimes look really scared when they see him, because boxers do look a lot scarier than they are. And they're soft mouthed though, they've got no teeth, you know, their teeth are practically like, you know, they're all kind of worn away. And they go, is he okay? And Kenny always goes, he is today, he's been fed. And I'm always like, he's so soft. But he's got a bit of a bark, and I think you felt that, didn't you? Spot is now, by the way, kind of cradled on my lap.
Yeah, I know, it's so
sitting on the sofa, which, you know, if my dogs could see him, they'd be so jealous that he's sat on the sofa.
So embarrassing, because you've got a beautiful home. And I just said, Spot, you're not sitting on the sofa here, because it's just, it's spotless. It's lovely.
And he looked
spotless,
at you
excuse
and went,
the
no.
Palm. And he went, no, I quite like her. I like Gabby. I'm just going to jump and sit on her lap. So that's kind of where he has positioned himself.
Now he's looking at you going, don't worry, I still love you, Mum. It's okay.
You're pathetic, Spot. Totally pathetic. Milo and Maggie seem very, very comfortable with each other. And given we had dog wars a little earlier with Spot kind of coming in and going, oh, what's all this about? Were they always like that?
So sweet. We've got such adorable pictures of when Maggie was a puppy, kind of cradled into him, like, you know, with his body around her as if he's, you know, just hugging her at night. He'd come down in the morning and they'd be sleeping almost in a spooning kind of position. And in the morning she does this disgusting thing, which reminds me of monkeys. Have you ever been in the wild when you see monkeys cleaning each other,
yeah,
you know, when they pick the, you know, all the flies out because they love each other. And Maggie goes up and licks his eyes because he gets a bit of eye gunge, and she licks his eyes for him in the morning, which must be love. You can't do that to somebody you don't like, can you? I mean, I don't think my husband would do that to me. And so they've got
a glimpse into the Logan life that I wasn't expecting.
They're very, you don't realize how much they miss each other when they're away as well, because Milo's nearly 9 and he's had 2 major hip operations, which sadly is a thing with boxers. And so he can't do good running anymore. He can do a nice walk. If you take a nice pace, he'll do a good hour, but he won't run. And he certainly won't do a run up a hill. And so, but Maggie can run and run. So sometimes in the morning I come down and I pretend to Milo that I'm about to make his breakfast. And then I sprint out the door with Maggie and go the other way, because, and he'll get a walk later, but I go for a run with her. And Lois said to me, oh, Mum, when you went out the other day, Milo was making a really kind of, you know, sad. I was like, oh, where are they gone again? They've left me. And so it's really hard, because you know that they actually don't like being separated. But sometimes you've got to take one of them to the vets or something and not the other one. And they do miss each other. So we're really, knowing that boxers don't live very, very long lives, you know, and he's 9 already, we're kind of thinking, what's the best thing to do for Maggie? Is it, you know, that we get another dog, kind of anticipating that he won't be here? Or do we...
Well, it's interesting you said that, actually, because I chatting to Andrew Cotter about that, and with the phenomena that now is Olive and Mabel.
The brand that is Olive and Mabel.
The brand that is Olive and Mabel. And he was, you know, Olive came first. She's the older dog, and then lovely Mabel came along. But he literally got Mabel. He clearly adores Mabel, but he got Mabel because he didn't want to be without a dog if anything should happen to Olive.
Yeah.
And so he'd kind of already got his dog planning.
He's got his replacement.
He's got his heir and a spare, you know, because it was important to him. He adores dogs so much. He was like, I do not want to be in a situation
where
I don't either have one, or I loved having 2 dogs.
Yeah. Well, I now can't imagine not having 2 dogs, you know, and we were contemplating a third.
Were you? Wow.
Yeah, because Ruben really wanted his own dog. He said, I feel like I want to have, you know, that relationship from the start and it be my dog. And so I think he was trying to test me, because he said, Lois has all these ponies and she has all this animal relationship, and I don't have that one, although I find him all the time lying in Milo's basket with him, you know, so he has a really close bond with Milo because he's the biggest dog, and Ruben's 6'5", so he kind of has this thing about big dogs. So he wants, close your ears, Spot, you won't like what he's thinking of getting. He's thinking of getting he said to me he wanted a Great Dane. I talked him out of a Great Dane because I said they're not very athletic.
That's true.
And then he decided a Dog de Bordeaux, and then he was an English Mastiff.
What, sorry?
A Dog de Bordeaux, because he was looking at the heaviest.
It sounds like a village in France.
Well, that's what it looks like, a village in France. It looks like it's eaten a village in France. And basically they weigh about 75 kilos. So he was looking for these really heavy dogs. I got him right down in the end to an Alsatian. I brought the breeds down and down and down. I said, what about an Alsatian? Anyway, I then decided that he was just not responsible enough. And actually, the next dog we have should be a family decision, not just being driven by one teenage boy.
When I was chatting to Charlotte Hawkins, it became very apparent that she has a strict hierarchy in her house. And so, you know, the humans in the house are the lord, that they're in charge, basically. And the dogs know their place, and, you know, they don't go upstairs, they don't go on the beds. And she could see the sort of look of horror on my face, sort of, where I was like, she looked at me and she went, Spot's loud on your bed, isn't he? And I was like,
well, do you know what?
Yeah, he is. And I'm thinking, well, I'll ask Gabby the same question.
They don't go upstairs.
But I'm thinking, hang on a minute, there's no way Milo could sleep on your bed.
But what the kids do now, they think it's really funny and they don't tell us. They, We go to, I always check on them before, you know, even at 15, go and kiss them goodnight, make sure that they're, you know, that they're in bed. Although generally they're going to sleep after us these days.
Yeah,
you know,
of course.
We're old people. And they've got kind of wardrobes that are like mini walk-in wardrobes. And a couple of times this summer, they've put the dogs inside the wardrobes and we've walked out and then the dogs have slept on their beds. And then in the morning, they delight in telling us how, you know.
Clever tactics.
Yeah, yeah. But I get it, you've ruined it now because you've told me where you hide them. And, so they, and they've done it more than once. I know they have, where they've kept the dogs upstairs. So I kind of, you know, let them just pretend that I'm very cross. Don't do it again,
yes.
But knowing full well they will. But funny, even though Kenny has grown up with animals all over the shop as a farmer and dogs have different roles on farms, don't they? So they'd have dogs that never go in the house because their job is to either catch other animals or to, you know, to be guard dogs for the farmyard and, you know, guard equipment and things. And then they have dogs that do go in the house, you know, so it's like this kind of weird, even different kind of hierarchy,
yeah.
You know, but even with all of that and dogs all over the shop and, you know, him growing up, he's quite, you know, dogs are out the bedroom kind of thing. He's yeah, he would be, if I suddenly turn around and say, but this dog's allowed to be on the bed, I think he'd think I'd gone mad.
So. Yeah, there's two camps that, and you're either in that camp
yeah.
where they have to
What's
be downstairs.
Andrew?
Definitely sleep downstairs, and then he does say we have the odd lie-in in the morning and the dogs come upstairs, and you know, he was
yeah.
talking about Mabel in particular is kind of spark out on the bed
yeah.
and she does what's called, he said, he described, very funny, he described it as the pillow creep. So one minute Mabel's at the foot of the bed, next minute he sort of turns over and there she is with her head on the pillow
yeah,
kind
yeah,
of looking
yeah.
more human than a
well,
Labrador
Sydney,
should.
I remember when we lived in Glasgow and Sydney the boxer, I remember I was pregnant at the time and I remember her falling asleep with me on the bed because I was always napping because I was pregnant, so I was always like, you know, I'll sit down for 2 minutes and take my shoes off, an hour later I'd just woken up. And she was always on the bed with me, but I don't think I told Kenny. I think he was at training.
Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady, live only on Netflix.
This episode is brought to you by Etsy. Looking to instantly upgrade your Mother's Day gift from typical to meaningful? Shop Etsy. Now until May 12th, get up to 30% off personalized jewelry, style, decor, and so many other items mom will love. And if you want her to know you put a ton of thought into her present, use Gift Mode. Gift Mode on Etsy takes the stress out of gifting so you can easily find well-crafted, original, and affordable pieces from small shops. Just tap or click Gift Mode on your Etsy app or Etsy.com. Then answer a few short questions about mom, and Gift Mode instantly gives you curated ideas based on hundreds of personas. Need something original and affordable for Mother's Day? Etsy has it. Shop until May 12th for up to 30% off gifts for mom. Terms apply.
Yeah. So, I mean, I wanted to talk a little bit about Sydney, actually, because you've got Milo and Maggie now, but you know, you've had dogs now as a family. So what was it like when you have to face that awful reality of losing a dog? Because I've not had to experience that. And I look at Spot, he's only four. I think, oh, I've got Spot forever. And there's even just in that odd moment, I go, what would it be like if he wasn't there? And you've experienced that. So, you know, as a family, how do you deal with something like that?
Well, it was interesting because it was as a family as well. It wasn't because the kids were of such an age that they were just eight that summer, I think. And I think maybe it was the cusp of their birthday around that time when we actually said goodbye to her. So they'd grown up with her their whole lives. You know, we brought our twins back from the hospital and brought Sydney out of the house to meet them on the drive, you know, because that's what we were told you do with dogs. You don't impose the babies into them. You let them come out and sniff the babies. So from that very first meeting, you know, she was in love and enraptured by them. You know, she used to sleep under their Moses basket in the kitchen. She was on fireworks on bonfire night. She was never bothered by fireworks. And their first bonfire night, we'd gone out for dinner. And when I came back, my auntie was babysitting and she said, oh, she went upstairs and lay outside their nursery. So I hope that's all right. And I was just like, because she was never upstairs. And so she just loved them to bits and they loved her. So they obviously, being kids, they never think about anybody not being there for them, you know, and that included their family dog. So when she got ill, which was it was a really quick demise, she went from being perfectly healthy to not very well at all within a few months. And we knew we couldn't keep her alive. It was just not fair what was happening to her. You know, she had stomach cancer and she was bleeding all the time. And, you know, the doctor said there's nothing more we could, said there's nothing more we can do. And we had to make that decision. And Sonia, honestly, it wasn't just us. It was like everybody who knew her where we lived in Richmond, but like Kenny's old PA drove across London to say goodbye to her. And people were coming in like it was her last day. They knew she was going that night or that afternoon. And then the four of us took her to the vets, and the vets were amazing. And they said, it's up to you. But sometimes, you know, for children, it's a very interesting kind of experience for them to actually remember and go through, because they don't experience death, and you don't want them to experience the death of a grandma or anybody close. So we all sat on the floor, and when they injected her, she very quickly fell asleep, and we just all hugged her and told her how much we loved her. And
so you'd obviously decided to go and be in the room, because I'm just not sure I could be in the room.
The kids were really wanted her to, they wanted to be sure she wasn't in pain. I said, Lois was very much like, are they going to hurt her? Because to them, you imagine for a child, the idea of death is pain and suffering. Mm. And I said, well, this is the opposite. We're going to do this to make sure she's not in pain anymore. And so I think for them, it was peace of mind that what we were saying was right. And actually she just looked so peaceful. And then we wrapped her up and put her in the car and drove straight here from Richmond's, about an hour away. And so in the car from the vets to here, because we knew we wanted to bury her here and we weren't living here just yet. Lois, I said to somebody the other day, I was talking about it, and I said, she was like, she wailed like a professional whale. She just talked constantly to the sky as if she was talking to Sydney, just about how much she loved her and what she thought of her and how she'd never forget her. And she's still got the blanket from her basket that she keeps in her wardrobe, that sometimes I go in and it's on her bed, you know. And she's, so in that relationship, that they'll never forget her, you know, because now it's 7 years. Yeah. So, and it's, the memories are as, you know, as strong as they ever were. And the love is as strong as it ever, you know, and even though they adore these dogs, that bond, they'll never forget. And so I was Kenny and I were devastated, because this was our puppy that we'd had before our children, you know. And
it was really your fur baby, wasn't it, early on?
And then to add to that, seeing our children so upset as well, you know. So it was, it was a really tough one for us all to kind of process in different ways.
Because very sadly, you lost your brother when you were 15. So as a young woman, you experienced what grief is. And yet this was, you know, people sometimes, I think, dismiss when you say my dog died, you go, oh, that's a shame. And then, you know, with the next heartbeat, they've moved the conversation on somewhere else. And yet it's an incredibly powerful thing that was there for teaching your children about grief, you know, and having to experience that for the first time. I imagine it was very hard.
Sadie, our first family dog, or the first family dog that I remember, died, and I was a teenager. It was really sad, but because my mum was never a dog person. She kind of suffered them for, you know, she was like, the kids like dogs, so we'll have dogs. And so it wasn't the collective of the family kind of, you know, in that moment. Whereas with Lois, has always been a real animal person, you know, and so she just doesn't treat, they're no different to humans. Do you know what I mean? That in her head, it's like, why would you treat them any different? I don't, you know. So for the kids to go through that without, as I say, you know, you never want to go through what we had to go through in losing my brother and my parents.
No, I'm not trying to compare.
No, what I mean is, you don't want that experience.
Your brother to a dog. No, that's not what I'm doing. But it's just an interesting dynamic to a young person.
To experience it. And then even the conversations that would come out afterwards, in some way in their brains, then they would say, okay, because remember her saying to my mum a while afterwards, about, she said to my mum, losing your son must have been like the, because she put the relationship with my mum had with my brother, her uncle, into a different context. Do you know what I mean? And she saw it as then. So I think while they appreciated it wasn't the same, they learnt about loss. And but it is, you know, for us, I mean, Kenny had also had a big loss in his life. His cousin, who was like a brother to him, died when he was 19, when Kenny was 19. And, you know, so we'd experienced loss as adults ourselves. But your family pet, your dog, is, you know, it's entwined in all these memories that you've created together as a family, and you've seen your children learn so much from the dog. And, you know, it was just so heartbreaking to see them so heartbroken.
It's all those stories, isn't it, that will always be there, you know, the thread that is woven through your family dynamic. Yeah. And my sister's had dogs for 20 years. We weren't a dog family growing up, but my sister has had dogs for years and years and years. And actually, my sister has got Spot's direct brother in Herbie. And so I was very influenced by her to get a Parsons Terrier. That's why I chose that particular breed. And I have so many fond memories of all her various dogs and having spent time with them as a family and all this, the escapades they got up to. And I remember there was one, it was his father actually, Patch, got stuck in a hay barn and we obviously knew eventually where he'd ended up. We couldn't find him for hours and hours and hours, and there he was in a hay barn upside down, stuck fast in this against these bales of hay. And you know, he was in all sorts of bother and we thought we were going to lose him, actually he lived to fight another day. It's all those memories, isn't it, that comes
with that,
the dogs and the various escapades they get up to,
and how you, as a, you know, like, remember Kenny being away one weekend and Maggie used to go for runs on her own, so she'd find a little way out, and we'd, you know, regularly get a call from a neighbour saying, so we now really fenced things, and actually she's grown up now, so she doesn't bother going out on her own. But back then we realised she'd gone, and I got the kids in the car because they were too young to leave at home, and we were driving around the countryside just screaming her name out the car, and I was genuinely thinking, this is it now, this is
the, you know, horrible,
because it was 2.5 hours. We got back into the drive and we were all exhausted emotionally. The kids were kind of crying and thinking that was because I think might have been Reuben who'd left a gate open. So of course Lois was blaming him, and it was all, then this car pulls up, the Wickham dog catcher, which sounds like something out of Scooby-Doo, and charged me 90 quid for the pleasure of handing my dog back.
No, it's Hansel and Gretel, isn't it?
Yes, it is Hansel and Gretel.
It's the scary dog, it's the
apparently,
scary rat catcher.
There's a road about half a mile from here that apparently Maggie had just wandered into somebody's very nice house and spent the afternoon watching live football with them and had a nice time in front of the fire. It was a winter's afternoon. They'd given her some snacks, then eventually they called the Wickham dog catcher. So she'd had 2 hours. She looked like, oh, I've had a, let me tell you about my afternoon, as I begrudgingly gave 90 quid to the Wickham dog catcher. Yeah,
the Wickham dog catcher does sound rather scary.
Well, he opened up the back of his van and there were about 9 crates, so he could fit up to 9 dogs in the back of this van if he wanted to, but that afternoon he'd only managed to find mine, so she's chipped obviously. So
what do you ring up the Wickham dog catcher and go, my dog's missing, can you help? Or how was he even involved?
He'd got the chip, called the number on the chip, which was Kenny. Kenny couldn't get hold of me because we were driving around the country, there's no signal, so he told Kenny had told him where we lived, so he just turned up and I was going, how did you know to come here? But even like you mentioned other people's dogs, like this road, I was thinking about this the other day, nearly everybody on this side of the road has a dog and most of the other side, so I know everybody's dogs so well. Like Oscar, the who lives over there, the Jack Russell, he regularly comes in. In fact, he christened one of our very expensive new carpets when we moved in. He ran around the house and just decided to pee in the middle of the carpet when there's no furniture in here. I've forgiven him. And Oscar's kind of like, he's regularly at the back door just wanting a chat, and sometimes he'll wander in the, and then there's another dog, Freo, who also seems to self walk up and down the road and parades up and down. So it's quite lovely having that kind of community of dogs. And there's, Frank is my favourite, my friend's dog over the road. It's a long-haired Vizsla, and he's just completely, he's named after Frank Lampard because the dad's a big Chelsea fan, and he's just hilarious. And, you know, they've all got such wonderful but completely different personalities. Like Milo's obviously the grumpy boss guy, do you know what I mean?
As Spot has discovered.
Yeah. He's just like, I don't do much small talk. In fact, if Milo was a human, he would literally be the guy in the bar just nursing his pint all evening going, oh, I don't do small talk, no.
Whereas Maggie, I love that story you were telling Paddy, the producer, and I about Maggie, who perpetually wags her tail, except on the one day that your daughter Lois needed her to
just
wag
perform
her tail.
Her tail, honestly, to the point where I think she might actually put herself into a spasm. It can get so excitable, and tail goes constantly. So when the poster went up for the waggiest dog competition at the waggiest tail dog at the local village fair, Lois thought she was in for a shoeing. You know, there was absolutely no way that this was not going to be a victory for the Logan household. So she takes her along, and Maggie literally, it was almost as if it went numb. It didn't just stop wagging; it went underneath and wrapped itself kind of inside her. And for the lady said, "Does she do agility?" No, this is what she does.
She wags her tail. Honestly, her tail.
She was desperately disappointed. I kind of like Maggie's, do you know what? I'm going to show you. I am not a performing. I'm not a seal. I'm a dog. Yeah. I don't do shows.
Yeah, I'm staging a sit-in.
Yeah, and I was like, gosh, they seem to enjoy crafts, but when they put them in the limelight, they didn't want to do it.
Spot's being a floozy again and is back on your lap and your sofa. I'm really, really embarrassed to say. way. I mean, Gabby, you're one of the most energetic women I know. You got this hugely successful career. You got this family that, you know, you're looking after. You've got, you know, you're very passionate about fitness and all of that you do. So do you relish the ability to just go into the countryside around here and go on a dog walk and enjoy that solitude and the bird song that we can hear out here now?
Yeah, I didn't settle immediately out here when we first left London, and we lived in Kew, so it wasn't as if we lived, like, you know, in the middle of Hackney, or, you know, we kind of lived near great parks and all of that. But I when I first came out here, I didn't quite know how to behave, do you know what I mean? and also, it takes you a while to find your tribe, doesn't it? Mm. And you need kind of, even though you're still in contact with your old friends, and we all live these lives that are very, well, they were very international.
Yes.
and we travel a lot with our jobs, and we think it's okay that our friends live hours away. Actually, it's nice to have people around you that you enjoy the company of. And so it took me a while to kind of find that, and also to go for a walk in a different way. I know that sounds stupid, but when you're in a city and you go for a walk with a dog, like, I'd take Sydney down to the local park and she'd have a bit of exercise and we'd wander the streets and I might stop at a cafe and I might meet something. It's different to just setting out and walking for an hour and sometimes changing your mind in the middle of the walk because you decide to go right and you're going to go that way. And, you know, and the dog's finding, and then when the dogs find something interesting, they want to sniff for a while or they do something. So it took me a while to get into that rhythm, but I do absolutely love it. And I love them taking me places, you know, and kind of, in fact, the other day I was walking with Kenny and he said something, which I thought, oh, I do that. And he said to Maggie, I'll let you take me today. Cause sometimes they turn right before you're ready to, or they turn, yeah, you know, and you go, no, this way. And they just kind of led him. He was out for a lot longer than he thought he was going to be out. And his other dogs took me on a longer walk, and which I quite like that. You can just, you know, you can do it, can't you, out here?
You can do it. I've only got one dog who's, you know, despite being small, there's clearly can have his moments. But you've got a bit of a handful with two. So do you have to have eyes in the back of your head when you're out for a walk? Or are they pretty good?
No, they're pretty good. Maggie's the one that's more likely to hear, you know, a muntjac, which are these kind of small deer animals that we get around here. She's more likely to hear one of those and kind of sprint into the bush, or she'll hear a squirrel or something. Whereas Milo does this thing where he kind of looks at me as if to say, I guess I've got to behave like a dog now, haven't I? And then he kind of, I'll go pretend I want to chase it as well. He knows he's never going to get to whatever that thing is first. So he kind of like does this, oh, okay, all right. He's happy to pass alongside me, but sadly now he's a bit too old to go for a run, so Maggie and I sneak off. We do little sneaks where we pretend I'm going one way in the kitchen and then I sprint the other way and grab a lead, because even though she'll run alongside me, I always have a lead just in case. Mm. You know, because even in the country you never know, do you, what, you know, when you're going to need to put your dog on the lead. So
it's one of my greatest regrets, actually, having really wonky knees and not being able to run anymore, because Spot loves going for a run.
Really?
And my sister and my niece, when they're around, they're good runners and they take Spot with them, and he comes back and I was like, how was he? Was he okay? Like, he's like, you know, had to stop or was out of breath,
yeah,
or something.
And he's fine.
She's like, no, absolutely fine. Yeah, he just kept going. Yeah. He loved it. I'm thinking, wow, this is a whole different dimension to my dog.
Yeah.
And I know he can do, and I don't get to see because I can't run anymore. And so that's one of my greatest regrets.
Yeah,
that
it's,
I can't
really lovely.
Just go for a run.
At the beginning, Maggie always goes off ahead of me and then comes back. And then, you know, she does this kind of like fartlek, you know, she's constantly, and then by the end of it, she's usually like either alongside me or just behind me, actually, because she does kind of towards the end start to tire, which I feel slightly more, you know, nowadays I feel a bit happier about that. Actually, I can still tire her out, and she's not, you know, she's not completely, although sometimes she comes back from a run with me and then goes out on a walk straight afterwards with Milo. So she's, you know, she's definitely a dog that, because I remember Andrew Cotter saying to me, actually, when we were getting her, because I had always had boxers and he likes boxers, family had boxers, he said what you'll find though with your labradoodle is that she will run and run. And so I was like, okay, that's good, because poodles also run really well. So
I didn't know that about poodles. I just assumed
poodles
that they
are
kind
super
of...
dog. I would have a standard poodle again in a heartbeat. They're
would
really
you?
They're really intelligent dogs, much more intelligent than Labradors. So that's, you know, the kind of the brains of the bunch, I think, is in the labradoodle, comes from the doodle bit. And but they're also real athletes, because
I always thought with poodles, you know, standard poodles, that they're kind of, you know, walk around Paris looking very chic.
Well, that's
and
the ones that
out.
Get cut. Well, as we used to have what they call lamb cut, which is where they just let the fur grow and then you just trim it for health purposes so that they don't get it in their eyes. So she was just, our poodle was just shaggy, like a brown shaggy dog that you kind of looked more like, remember those Portuguese water dogs that Obama used to have? Remember those black dogs?
Yes, I do.
So it looked a bit more like that. And so she was, and in summertime you do cut them because they get really hot. So you would trim them for their own health benefits. Mm. But no, they're great. But Kenny will not be talked into a poodle because
Kenny and a poodle, I can't see it.
He's got this perception of poodle, which is something pink in a cartoon that's, you know, parading. And I'm going, no. So I might just secretly buy a poodle.
And we travel a lot, the pair of us, with work. We did anyway, and we can be away for long periods of time. And I'm sure you miss Kenny. I'm sure you miss your children. But do you miss the dogs as well? Because I know, I mean, I miss Spot enormously when I'm away, and I've tried FaceTiming him, and he's just hopeless.
He doesn't answer.
I'm saying to my mum, who's generally got it, mum, just let me speak to Spot, you know. And I'm going, Spot, hi, and I can hear him vaguely recognizing it for a second, and then he's like, no, he's off doing something completely different.
But I think that's a nice thing about them, though. Don't you think that's good that they don't actually miss you enough to kind of?
No, I want him to be missing me terribly.
But it's a bit like when I first went away to it was the Olympics in Beijing. It was the first time I'd gone away for a long period of time from my kids. So they were three, and of course I just missed them dreadfully, and you know, really pained me every day. And I got home and realized they'd had the best time, and they didn't really. And the reason I knew that they didn't miss was because I decided to take them to Legoland the first day I got back, which is a horrible place. And you've really got to love your kids to take them there. And I'm driving down the 316 from Richmond, and we pass Twickenham, and my son, who's three, turned around and said, oh, mummy, look where you were, the bird's nest. I was like, which is about a mile from our house. And I thought, well, the fact that you think I'm only a mile away for 3 weeks, at least, you know, you have no problem with that at all. Yeah. So I realized then it's a bit like dogs, you know. I think that you miss them more than they miss you. And that's, even though I want my kids to miss me, in a way you kind of don't want that to be the case.
No, of course.
Want them to be happy. So I stopped missing the dogs as much when I got the children, because when I was first married and with Kenny, we'd go away. When we first went away and left the dog, that was terrible. We'd be like ringing up going, where's the dog, and of course then you start realizing that you haven't got the dog on your phone as the picture anymore, you know, you've got the kids and things like that. But actually it is when we come back from holiday, that whole reunion for everybody, when the dogs get really excited that you haven't died.
They've come back.
They really are. Do you know what? It's really interesting though, because they do know what cases mean. You know, when they start hearing the wheels,
the suitcase thing.
On the hall floor, and you can see them looking like, oh, they're going away. And but they tend to stay here, and somebody comes and looks after them here, so they don't have to go to kennels.
That's a good idea.
So yeah, so they tend not to have to go anywhere else. So I think now that they don't go anywhere else, they're all right.
Ahead of the Rugby World Cup, actually, I had my suitcase on the bed in the spare room, and I, because it was just easier to put stuff in it. And Spot actually immediately knew what I was up to, was less than impressed. And I got this photo of him sitting inside the suitcase, kind of like parked off, going,
I'm going, sorry,
you're not going anywhere. And, or if you are, you're taking me with you. And I'm like, sorry, Spot, you're definitely not coming.
But I bet he was very excited when you got home, wasn't he?
Well, he's excited if I've been for 3 minutes or if I've been for 3 hours.
Yeah, and you can't tell.
It just opens. I open the door and he's kind of like, you know, jumping up.
I always
say wagging
about
his
Maggie
tail
in the morning,
so
when
happy.
When I come down in the morning, Maggie, because I'm invariably the first up, Maggie greets me as if she's surprised I've managed to live through the night. You know, it's like kind of, she goes, oh, you're here again. When Milo kind of gives me a cursory nod, like, oh yeah, you're all right. We play this game quite often, Lois and I, about how their voices, you know, if they were human, what would their voices sound like? And, you know, I give Maggie a kind of very kind of effeminate, light Yorkshire accent. And Lois doesn't like that. She's like, no, she wouldn't sound like that. Whereas Milo, Milo's voice is baritone. You know, so like, you're all right? Yeah, all right. You're right. Sleep well? Yeah, all right.
I actually saw you do that on Instagram. There was a video and you did the voiceover and you were talking as if you were Milo and Maggie.
Was that when we were introducing them to the tortoises? We were doing...
No, there were no tortoises involved in the making of this video, but you definitely were being their alter egos in this video. And it was actually, it was very, very funny. Can you put into words what those two dogs mean to you?
They mean unity. It's like they kind of unify everything. You know, if they're not here, it does feel like something's missing, and so they complete everything, I think. And they are an emotional support for the children. You know, I find the kids really, as teenagers, they spend a lot of time just lying next to them, and I know that they're offloading with them. You know, they're just spewing up what's on their mind, and maybe they're doing it verbally, maybe they're just doing it kind of subconsciously. And so they're kind of a sponge, or that, you know, they take everything in and then they unify everything in the way that they kind of give you that bond, that extra bond as a family. They're just amazing creatures.
And can you now just see a future where you will always just be the Logan family and other animals?
Oh yeah, I can't imagine. Like when people say, I've got friends who, maybe they get a dog, maybe they won't, and they say things like, but when we go away, I mean, it'd be such, you know, it's such hassle when you have a dog. And that just doesn't even enter my mind. I can't imagine kind of, you know, that being a reason not to have an animal. We'll just deal with it. It just, you know, I just, if you said to me, well, you can't really ever go on holiday again. Okay, fine. That's what we'll have to.
What it is.
Yeah, we'll take. You said to me when you came in, I mentioned we've been to Scotland recently, and the kids would love us to travel with the dogs. You know, they're desperate. I think Sydney once went to Glen Eagles with us, but these two haven't. And because two dogs, no matter how big your car is, you can't take any more luggage.
No.
Milo is the weight
of a small suitcase, yeah. Isn't it?
So, but I would, yeah, if it meant that we just always had to drive with them on holiday, that would be, so be it.
It's fantastic to talk to you. I'm really grateful. It's been fun.
Thank you.